Hey y'all, it's A Few Minutes with the Pew podcast. I'm Lily.
And I'm Maddie.
And we have a passion to see people make Jesus number one in their everyday lives.
We want to get serious about being serious for Jesus. Will you join us?
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We are really excited to have you back in the studio with us this week. This week we are talking about a topic that I don't think we've ever discussed before, but I am super excited. Well, I guess we kind of have in terms of like Bible study and that kind of thing, which is the same thing.
But we're talking about it in much more specific terms today and psychological terms.
We're both excited because we both have a passion in this area, and we are both very interested by this topic, and that is group therapy, psychotherapy, all of those kinds of things. Group counseling, if you will, whatever you want to label it, just that kind of field of study. And I am currently in the process of getting my minor in counseling. So I've been studying this over the course of the last couple of years, but really this past semester, I've taken a deep dive into a lot of these different classes that have to do with psychotherapy and group counseling and just that field of study. So I'm learning so much and I'm trying to retain all of it because it is a lot of information. But this morning, I was actually in the middle of a quiz and I am going over my answers and looking at a couple different things. And it was specifically talking about how to deal with very specific issues that people are dealing with within a group. So how does the therapist respond to the person who is way too needy? How do you respond to the person who can't stop talking? How do you respond to the one that manipulates the group and kind of monopolizes it and those kinds of things? And so that's really what I was digging into.
You sound very professional.
Thank you.
People are monopolizing on the group.
I know. Yeah. I have experienced that in my real life. It's not pleasant. And I'm sure all of you have as well. And it's just, oh. But anyways, so the quiz was mostly about how do you, as the therapist, respond to this? How do you deal with it? Because you also want to treat that person. Like, that is the whole point. You can't just remove them from the group unless it gets to a certain point or degree, obviously, where that is appropriate or needed. But most of the time, it's really not necessary. Most of the time, we just need to treat them appropriately and know the different methods to take and so forth and so on. And so I'm digging into this quiz and I'm looking over all these answers and, you know, how do we deal with people who have anxiety? How do we deal with the silent person? How do we deal with all these people, right? And most of the time, the therapist really is dealing with all of these different monopolies at the same time. You know, you're trying to deal with all of these different personalities and characteristics and just all of these issues that people have at the very same time because they all have different problems.
Yeah.
So I just found this very interesting because it just hit me suddenly. I wonder how much of this could be fixed or could be avoided, if you will, if people would just parent correctly, if people would just actually parent and do their job. I just kind of started thinking about that, like, boy, I wonder how many people are in group counseling, are in therapy, are doing these things, because I mean, the numbers are astronomical. It is ridiculous how many people truly believe that they are in desperate need of someone else's professional expertise when it comes to dealing with their problems and addressing different things. And so, like, they just need someone to tell them what to do, basically. And that's why they're in therapy. And I would agree with them. Like, a lot of them do need professional help. We see this in our world all the time. And people are struggling, shall we say. They are...
And searching for answers.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. And we're being pulled in a thousand different directions, and nobody knows what to do. It's like no one has a sense of direction anymore.
Yeah.
Or any idea what to do. And so we think that, well, the best solution to these problems and to know what to do with my life and to get a sense of direction, I need professional expertise. I need a professional opinion and I need to just be told what to do and then I'll do it and everything will be okay. Like I'll just have someone tell me what to do because I can't decide. I am very passionate about this because it really did just hit me this morning that what if we just had parents that actually did their job, because as I'm reading this, and this is no credit to mom or dad or anything like that, because I know that they wouldn't even want me to say this, but as I'm reading through these different issues that, you know, therapists are having to address and dealing with every single day in their field, I'm thinking, like, did your parents not train you to deal with that? Like, did they not help you learn the art of processing information and of regulating your emotions and how to deal with stress and how to appropriate.
What?
Oh my gosh. I thought there was a mouse or something. Sorry guys, there was a spider. If you hear my chair moving up. Anyways, it is dead now. So don't worry, Maddie. It's fine.
Good grief. You scared the crap.
It's dead. Okay. Anyways, where was I?
Okay, so my parents apparently didn't teach me how to regulate my emotions when to Lily looking at the ground and being like,
I did not make that noise. I just looked at the ground and I was dealing with it. Anyways, see, I can process. I see a spider.
Usually she can't. And usually I have to deal with those kinds of things.
It's fine, guys. It's fine.
I'm the tougher, crazier second child.
So, yeah. Anyways, so I'm thinking, like, your parents haven't taught you how to do these things. Like, this is just basic stuff to me, you know? Like, I'm not saying that I get it perfect every time or that I deal with stress in a perfect way. And, you know, it's just to a T what a professional therapist would tell me to do. You know, like, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that I can process my emotions and I can regulate my nervous system and I can do these things. Because as I've been raised, I have been shown what that looks like in real life. So when you encounter a problem, how do you not panic? How do you take your time to work through it? How do you try to block everything else out and to actually pay attention to the problem and get what needs to be done, done? And you know what I was just reminded of is when you go get your permit test, you know, I was so shocked by this. When you go get your permit test, they literally ask you if you want headphones. Right?
Your driver's permit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Not just a general
permit should have to clarified. Live. No, a driver's
permit. There you go. You have permission now.
No. When you go to get your driver's permit, they literally ask you if you want headphones. And I always remember, like, just looking at them and being like, no, why would I want headphones? You know, like, yeah, this place is crazy. Yeah, there's noise. Yes, everyone's talking behind me. But that just shows you kind of, I guess, just a real life example that I just thought of randomly, that is where we're at in our culture, right? Because people cannot function unless the environment is perfect, their feelings are regulated, and they can process through things, and there's really no problems or issues. Really, they can't address anything on their own. And so I'm just thinking this morning as I'm taking that quiz, like, man, I really think that if parents would just put in the effort and take seriously their responsibility of raising their own children, which we constantly talk about here on the show. What if parents actually took on the responsibility that is theirs and took on the authority that is theirs and said, we are actually going to train up our children in the way that they should go? And that includes being able to teach them how to process things, how to regulate their emotions, how to deal with anxiety and stress and all of these different things that we face in our world, because everyone else is teaching them how to do those things in very, very bad worldly ways and teaching them not really to do it themselves, not to be independent and to really step into what the Lord has for them. Because as a parent, you can teach them, we don't have anything to fear. And when you experience fear, you remind yourself of these truths that fear is from the enemy and that it doesn't belong in my heart and that I can have authority over that in my life. And here's how I'm going to address it, through prayer and through actual action steps of following the Lord and doing the right thing and, you know, processing through those things. And as a parent, you can show them that in your everyday life because they're your kids and they should be with you and you should be the one to train them up in the way that they should go.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is a difficult job. This is something that isn't easy to do. This is not something that we all want to do. This is something that I, even as a young woman who does not have kids yet, but who has dealt with a lot of children and has babysat for many years, been in childcare, you know, worked within those kinds of realms before, I have seen a lot of kids who just have no idea what it looks like to deal with those things because mm-hmm. their parents haven't shown them how to deal with them. And it doesn't mean that they're not going to have times where they do really struggle with something yeah. or whatever. Of course, they're children. They're learning mm-hmm. what the world is and what it looks like. And it's a scary place to be in, especially their age, where they're trying to figure everything out. And why is everything so confusing? And why is everything so yeah. sad and depressing and all of those things? Like, we have to teach them and train them up in the way that they should go, that they can have confidence in the Lord and they can walk in the authority that He has given them as His children. And I think that this would just help this whole deal, this whole psychotherapy field, this whole group counseling thing, it would really help those types of groups and prevent a lot of people from ending up there in a very dark place in their lives yeah. If they were just taught how to process those things and how to deal with it before they hit their teenage years and young adulthood and even late adulthood, where they're panicking because they've never learned this before and they don't know how to make decisions. They don't know how to process things, how to deal with problems. And then they hit crisis and they yeah. have no idea what to do. And then they end up in that kind of situation, which is not a bad situation. Obviously, I'm getting mm-hmm. my minor in counseling. I think that counseling is needed. I think it is sometimes quite necessary depending on the yeah. situation. I am not an opponent of group counseling or group therapy by any means. I think it's great. But I do think that a lot of people end up there and wouldn't really need to end up there if they had been raised correctly and had been trained in the word of the Lord.
Yeah. And I know that a lot of people may be thinking right now, okay, well, what do you do if you don't have parents? Mm-hmm. Or what do you do if you're not in a specific circumstance that allows your mom to stay home with you or one of your parents to stay home with you to teach you, to really show you what it does look like to live and what it looks like to regulate your emotions and to do what's right and to cope with stress and chaos in the way that you're actually supposed to cope with it and stuff. All of that goes back to the basic disconnect within the family unit. It's really unfortunate because I think a lot of this stuff in terms of kids having not been taught by their parents, having a very deep connection with them, has started even in the generation before ours with millennials. And there was a lot of, you know, that was a big time for like, both parents need to be working. Dual incomes are absolutely necessary. You can't live off of one income. And, you know, your kids will do great in daycare. They need to be socialized and they need to be around other kids their age and they need to do this and do that. All of that is somewhat important, but in very controlled environments, I think. And that's where we have dropped the ball a little bit. And this has allowed parents to become more distant from their children, and then in turn allow their children to become much more distant from them. And then when that child is grown and now has a girlfriend who says that she's pregnant, they can very easily be like, okay, well, I'm not going to have anything to do with that, because a kid can survive without parental mm-hmm. guidance. So it's become much easier for parents to convince themselves that their kids don't need them because, well, my parents didn't need me. Right. And that's kind of the psychological thing that we convince ourselves of. And this, Lily's expertise is going to be all the group therapy and counseling and all of that stuff. Me, my expertise that I'm extremely interested in is the childhood psychology, what happened before this that caused that. Right. And that is where I, you know, I like to study that kind of thing. This is, I think, honestly, daycare is the biggest issue in our society these days, or one of the biggest issues in our society, because it is honestly my very deep and profound belief that daycare is what drums up a lot of these issues that people experience later in life. And I think that there aren't enough studies and people paying attention to this stuff to realize how detrimental daycare truly is, especially in like this new generation of kids that is almost entirely in daycare. Mm-hmm. Some of the problems that I think daycare is creating is abandonment issues. You have this person who you have trusted for the past 2 years, or who has kept you alive, literally, because you can't do that yourself, for the first couple of years of your life. And then all of a sudden, one day, they just drop you off in this room completely full of strangers and other kids and chaos and screaming and loud colors and, you know, this very overwhelming environment. And they just drop you there and you can scream and you can cry and you can beg them not to leave you, and they are always going to. And I saw a devastating reel a couple months ago, and I told Lily that we needed to discuss it on the podcast. And it was this reel of probably 15 different clips. This person had made like a compilation of all these parents who were going to pick up their kids after their first full day at daycare and being separated from their parents for the first full day in a daycare environment. And literally clip after clip after clip was just these little kids, like two-year-olds. It was devastating. It honestly made me almost cry. All of these small children who are playing and they're fine while they're in the daycare environment, and they've been left in what they've been in for the last 6 or 7 hours and or more. And then the second that the door opens and they see their parents, it is just tears and sobbing and running into their parents' arms and like clutching them and balling up their parents' clothing in their fists. And you can just see by their body language, they are begging, do not leave me like that again. Like, don't leave me here with people that I don't know and people that I've never met before and who have never taken care of me and who don't love me. That is the main issue with daycare, I think, is that any parent who really loves their kid and wants to do what's best for them is always going to be better than putting your kid into a program where no one loves them and their job is simply to keep them alive. Mm-hmm. Make sure that the daycare doesn't get sued because this kid gets mortally injured. That is their priority. When they are not loved, it makes such a difference that I don't think that we even realize.
And you still have people within the daycare system who, you know, like we had a friend who worked in that for a few years, and she genuinely did love these kids, you know, but she can't love them the way that they need loved.
Yeah.
And that is from their parents. Mm-hmm. You know, she can't love them in that way. She can love them in a different way, but it's not going to be the same.
Yeah. And that makes a huge, huge difference. Right. Because, yeah, obviously, the people in these daycare systems, I do not believe, are just like, I don't give a crap about these kids. They're like, I don't like them. I don't anything. I literally, my only priority is keeping them alive. I don't think that they necessarily think that. And there are a lot of people like our friend who genuinely cared about these kids. I mean, every week since she had started that job, we would pray for the kids in her daycare because she would just say, like, they're hard to take care of because they do feel that abandonment and they are just really confused by what's going on and they're never with their parents and they want to be and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So there are people that, yeah, absolutely, they care for the kids and stuff, but they can't care for them in the same way. And that does make a difference. And so I think that this is one of those things that it's drumming up a lot of anxiety being in that kind of environment, because I don't really think that kids were made to be in an environment with all kinds of other kids and to have no boundaries, no rules, no regulations. Obviously, I think that, you know, the highlight of childhood is not having very many of those things, but some of them are essential to actually raising the kid in the way that they should go, like we've been talking about. Things like daycare and public school and all of these things are really wreaking a lot of havoc psychologically for a lot of these kids. And then we are turning out adults who aren't prepared to be parents because they've never been parented. They have no idea what to do. And you really have to hand it to some of these people who have decided to make different choices and have decided that they are going to be an involved parent and they are going to raise their kids correctly when they have had no example of that in their own lives. I totally commend those people because that has got to be so extremely difficult, because we always lead by example in everything. And when you don't have an example to follow, it's really difficult to create a good one for your kids to follow. But with all of these, like the abandonment issues and all of the anxiety and depression and suicidal thoughts and all of this stuff that is being experienced by so many people in our society today, it's so hard for them to overcome that because their entire life has been a repetition of abandonment every single day for 8 hours at daycare and then at school. And then you're expected to just pick up and leave at 18 for college. And, you know, then you're just supposed to be out in the world and apparently hate your parents and, you know, all of that stuff. It's ridiculous how our world has poisoned us against the family unit. And I think that this is why people turn to their therapists in a lot of ways and their counselors and look at them as like the be all end all, tell me what to do and I will do it. I mean, you look at when we sat down to record this, I was talking about how many people I see on social media that are constantly just saying like, so I was talking with my therapist the other day and they told me that I should try this and I should do this and I should do that. And then they look at that as this should fix my life. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely what I should do. This is the perfect solution. This is going to fix everything. And I really do feel bad for those people because therapists can't make your life perfect for you, and they can't tell you exactly what to do. Obviously, they have some specific training and different things that can help, and they can analyze the situation and kind of help you out with what you should be doing, what they think you should be doing. But honestly, is that what therapy and counseling is really for? As we were talking before we started recording this episode, and I'm sorry if you can hear some wind in the background, it literally sounds like we are about to take off and head for Oz right now, but hopefully not. Hopefully no tornadoes. This is what living in the Midwest is like. But we were talking about before we started recording how we feel like counseling and therapy in its purest and most original form was meant to be something that taught people how to think critically.
Right.
Not how to not think. Because I think that we have turned therapy into this thing where it's like, my therapist just needs to tell me what to do and then I'll do it and we'll see what happens. And it should fix my entire life. It doesn't prompt you to sit there with your therapist and be like, okay, here's what's happening. What happened before that though? That maybe led to that. What made me react like that? What made me do this? What made me do that? Instead, we sit there, we tell the therapist about what happened, and then we expect them to tell us why we reacted like that. Mm-hmm. What led to that? What happened that forced us to react this way? Instead of sitting there and saying, okay, this happened and then I reacted like this. And there was another time in my life where this happened and I reacted the exact same way. Mm-hmm. So how do I react differently now? And then you start thinking through that and you say, okay, well, what is the healthy way, the healthiest way to react to this situation? When this happens, I need to stop reacting this way. So what am I going to replace that with? And your therapist should just be there to be like, okay, yeah, you're asking good questions. What about this? Maybe think about this. Did this happen? If so, how did it happen? What did it lead to? That kind of thing. And to prompt you to continue that yourself. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in our society, and we do this with a lot of things, not just therapy, not just counseling, we always expect someone else to take responsibility for our actions, to take authority over our lives. And I think this is what has created such weak parenting, because we don't take authority over the children that God has placed in our care. And we just kind of say, oh, well, I hope that their teachers handle that at school because I don't have the energy to deal with that. Mm-hmm. We act like it's going to be so, so hard to correct certain behavior. And we don't think about one day my kid could end up in therapy and counseling because I didn't take the 5 minutes every day to correct this kind of behavior. And then they're going to be dealing with this for the rest of their lives and wondering how in the world did I get here? What caused this? When you have the power to change that for them. Mm-hmm. And obviously that comes from a lot of prayer, a lot of direction from Jesus in how you should raise your kids, obviously, because we are fallen, we make mistakes, we react the wrong way because this happened and this happened. And then it becomes this screaming match, or you just can't even look at your kid because you're seething with anger. Like, you know, we're all fallen and we all deal with things like that. Mm-hmm. But take responsibility for those actions.
Right.
Take responsibility that you are the one that reacted that way. You're the one that allowed things to escalate to that point. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out how to fix it next time. Figure out how to not allow that to happen. Examine your kids' behavior and say, okay, what led to this? Why do you have an attitude now? Why are you reacting this way to this certain thing? Why are you being disobedient? You know, that kind of thing. Something that I have noticed a lot within just like our babysitting and being in different childcare settings and stuff is it is not as difficult as we like to make it seem to correct bad behavior. Mm-hmm. You set down some expectations for the kids and then you stick to those expectations. This is how I expect you to behave and you will behave like this. And if not, there is going to be a consequence of some sort. Obviously, you know, we're not parents and we can't be like, you know, act this way or, you know, there are going to be punishments and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. We can't do that because, you know, they're not our kids and I would never dream of doing that. But there are a lot of cases where we're babysitting and you come in and these kids are like screaming and they are running around acting crazy. They're being disrespectful. They're being disobedient, you know, these different things. And our expectation as soon as we walk in is you are going to be respectful, you're going to be obedient, and you're going to calm down, and you're going to clean up after yourself, you're going to behave the way that you know how to behave. And if you don't know how to behave a certain way, then we'll teach you how to behave that way. No problem. Like, we will teach you how you are meant to act in this situation. And when you stick to your guns with things like that and you communicate that expectation to them, they do something and you tell them no once, don't back down from that afterwards. Don't be like, okay, I just can't even deal with it anymore, whatever. If you want to scream at me, I don't even care. I'm just going to stop reacting to you. Like, no, that's unacceptable. That was the expectation that was laid down in the first place. And we're going to abide by that expectation. That is how we're going to act tonight. And seriously, like, there are families that we babysit for, and we've been really blessed that we never have to deal with monstrous children. But there are some things that are like, okay, that's unacceptable. You know, you think that you don't need a babysitter, and so that automatically makes you think that you're allowed to be disrespectful or you're allowed to be disobedient. No, that's not.
You just showed me within what we're doing. You do need a babysitter.
That's true. But, you know, luckily, yeah, we have been blessed in a lot of different ways where when we're caring for the kids, they know that we care for them and stuff. And that obviously makes it a lot easier. They know that you like them and that you want to have a nice time with them. And, you know, you want it to be like a fun evening while mom and dad are doing date night or they have a meeting to go to or whatever. And the more that we go to these families' houses, the more that we spend time with these kids and we keep the expectations clear and the same, they're not fluctuating, they're not changing all the time, the more that these kids know that, like, when we get there, the screaming stops, the disobedience stops, the disrespect stops. They clean up after themselves. They sit down and eat dinner as a family. They wait to eat until we pray, you know, all of these different things because we have made that clear. And we are communicating to them in that we want to spend the time that it takes to make you better.
Right.
To make you into what we know that you can be. Because, you know, there are a lot of kids that we have watched who are constantly, like, you try and get them to do their homework. And they've convinced themselves that they can't read well, that they can't do math well, that they can't get all of this done in 15 minutes because they're smart and they are good at what they're doing and they can do it. And so as we sit there with them and we do their homework with them, we are communicating to them silently. We're not like tooting our own horn while we're sitting there and being like, I hope you appreciate how much time I'm devoting to you while we're doing this. No, don't do that. It's not a guilt trip thing. But as you just sit next to them at the countertop and you help them with the words that they don't know how to pronounce and you help them with a math equation, not doing it for them, but showing them you have the capacity to do this. You may need a little bit of help, but who doesn't? And you can get it done. You're communicating to them in that. You are worth my time. You are worth the time that it takes to make you into the person that you can be, the person that you are meant to be, the person that you want to be ultimately. Because I think that we have this very skewed idea of kids and adults that they don't actually want to be great. But I think that ingrained in our very soul, because we come from greatness, we are created in the image of God, and therefore we come from greatness. We come from someone who knows how to exercise authority, who knows how to take responsibility, who knows how to be good and how to be true and how to create what's beautiful. We come from that. And so we have the capacity to do that. And I think that we look at, you know, kids mostly, but also adults when they get to this point where they're in therapy and they're in counseling and they don't know what to do with their lives and it's falling apart around them. We get to this point where we think, you just don't want to be this. You can't be this. And even in taking the time that it takes to help them with a simple math equation, you are communicating to them that you are worth time and you're worth effort and you are worth what I'm putting into you and abundantly more.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we need to continue doing that when they end up in group counseling or, you know, therapy or whatever it is. And so much of this, I truly believe this, so much of this needs to be done within the church. Yeah. So much of this needs to happen there and not necessarily in worldly group counseling settings.
Our Bible studies should be our group therapy.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that that is what we're seeing in even our own Bible study mm-hmm. is we are all communicating different things. We are talking, we are discussing, we are working through life change and schedules and just so much life, really, just mm-hmm. decisions and all of those things we experience together. We're doing that together. We're helping each other. We are putting in that time that it takes to truly listen and to be a part of one another's lives and struggles. And that's what it looks like to become better and mm-hmm. to become great. And I just love that about our group because we all are willing to do that. We are committed to that. We have decided this is worth my time. You are worth my time. And I think that that is just so powerful and something that we need to keep in mind. And something that just hit me this morning, you know, just thinking about that, that all of these worldly things are not going to fix spiritual problems. This is mm-hmm. a spiritual problem. These people are ending up in therapy and group counseling in worldly settings because they did not receive the spiritual training and instruction that was needed long ago. And that's just the plain truth of it. If we would start there, and that starts mostly with parents, but also the church, and if it starts there, then we will see a dramatic change in people's lives 15 years down the road, 30 years down the road. They won't end up in these situations because they will understand how to work through them, but also they'll have people who care enough to work through it with them, alongside them, doing life with them every single day.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, we discussed a little bit. How does that work when this child does not have parents mm-hmm. who are willing to pour into them and who are willing to spend time with them, maybe doesn't even have a parental figure, father figure, mother figure? That's where the church should come in.
Yes.
Like, absolutely. I think that we really have dropped the ball in that because we should be youth pastors and mm-hmm. Sunday school teachers should be involved enough in their students' lives and should care enough about them. And I know that a lot of people do, and they just don't know how to go about it, to observe the fact that, okay, this student doesn't have a father figure. And we know that statistically, psychologically, that is going to be a problem for them right. at some point, even if they seem to be doing great, even if they have an incredible mom who is trying her absolute best to make them into this great kid, like, help her out a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and be that person for them, be that father figure for them, be that parental figure for them that ultimately reflects the love of Jesus that we're meant to be showing them in the church anyway.
Right.
And I think that this is something, it is very sad to see in the church that that's not happening as much as it should be, because we don't want to put the effort into dealing with a troubled kid who's going to end up in group therapy one day, who's going to end up in counseling, because it can take a lot out of you. But if you're persistent and if you are consistent with your expectations and with the love that you're showing them, I truly believe that we can make a super big difference in the people who actually do need therapy and counseling mm-hmm. because they're not just going to go to this worldly counselor who, oh, I saw an ad for BetterHelp on Instagram.
Yeah.
Not that that's necessarily bad, but they are going to be receiving worldly advice from that. And that's mm-hmm. not what they need. They need spiritual advice. They need spiritual help
yeah.
because we all know that that is where this is coming from. It is coming from a spiritual problem, a spiritual disconnect somewhere down the line. And that can often come from a family disconnect, because the family unit is meant to be such a representation of Christ, and then the church is supposed to be such a representation of Christ, and we're really dropping the ball on both fronts. And so why do we act like it's so crazy that all of these kids, these teenagers, these young adults have all of these conditions mm-hmm. and all of these mental disorders and, you know, different things that they're struggling with? Like, why are we surprised by that? Because we're not doing our jobs as the church, as parents, as family units. We are not functioning in the way that we are supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read you a verse that everybody should take to heart. Here is how you should be acting if you don't want your kid to end up in group therapy. Psalm 127 verses 3 through 5 says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate." This is a verse that our mom has liked for a very, very long time. We are her heroes, unfortunately. fortunately, because we have been blessed that, like, that's the way that we've been raised, as you are a weapon. You are a threat to the enemy, and you are powerful. If you are taking responsibility for your actions, you're taking authority over your life, and then handing that to Jesus and being like, do with me what you want. I think that this verse is so important to figuring out, okay, how do we change this then? Because obviously we want there to be some action here. We want there to be some change here. So how do we change it? We change it by acting like kids are worth our time and they really are a threat to the enemy. It takes time to create a weapon, to create something that is truly dangerous to the enemy. And as Christians, that's what we're meant to be. I don't mean this in like a weird communist China type way where we're looking at kids as these assets, but they are meant to be weapons to be used against the enemy spiritually. Mm-hmm. And they are something that we should be able to shoot off, send into the enemy's camp and be like, you are going to do amazing. They're going to look the enemy in the eye and say, do your worst because I'm good. I'm grounded, I'm rooted, and I have been trained up in the way that I should go, and I have been shot in here to mess you up. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the mindset that we should be going into when teaching kids as Sunday school teachers, as youth pastors, as children pastors. That is the mindset we should have. We are raising little threats to the enemy who are going to become very big threats if we do it right. And that is how we should be viewing. That's how we should be viewing all people, everyone that you're discipling, because they are like children in the faith. If you've got somebody that is newly saved, we talked about this a little bit last week about the importance of discipleship and training them up in the way that they should go. This is kind of the model for that. Like, treat them like they are a threat to the enemy, and they will be.
Right.
But if you don't treat them that way, they absolutely will not be. You'll shoot them off into daycare and into public school and then into college where they've never had a meaningful conversation with you, and you have never told them, like, you have the power to change the world, and it rests on your shoulders. Like, it's up to you. If we instill people with that kind of confidence and that kind of responsibility, because ultimately they do want this, and we're going to do another podcast episode about this maybe in the future, because this is a topic that I have been digging into recently. I listened to another podcast episode that has changed my life, and we may end up talking about it at some point. But like, the fate of the world rests on the shoulders of your kids, rests on your shoulders, because your kids are your responsibility. And that is where the weight of the world rests. Because if you shape your kids correctly, you shape the world correctly. Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful. And that is how we defeat the enemy at every single turn, because we are creating kids who can confidently say, do your worst, and they can mean it without fear, without anxiety, without depression, without suicidal thoughts, without the need for group therapy, without the need for counseling, because they have been in therapy and counseling their entire lives, because they have a parent who was willing to devote time to them, who was willing to say, you are worth all of my attention, all of my effort. You are worth every ounce of it and more. And I want to make sure that you are a threat to the enemy, because that's what you were created to be. That's what you were meant to be. That's what you want to be deep down in your soul. Because when we are created in the image of God, we are created to defeat evil, because that is the purpose of Jesus. That is what that is his example that we should follow, is a destruction of evil. And we have the power to do that. But unfortunately, these kids and these young adults are being robbed from that, because no one is willing to pour in the time to tell them, you are a threat to the enemy, and we're going to create you to be this weapon, to be something that we can shoot into the enemy's camp, and you are going to wreak havoc. Okay, so on that motivating and slightly terrifying note, perhaps, we're going to wrap this episode up. We hope that you guys enjoyed it, that maybe it was encouraging to you, that it was convicting, that it kind of highlighted some things in your life that you could be changing, that you could be putting action steps to. We hope that this was an episode like that for you guys, that it really inspired you to do some things differently, to change your life, to create little weapons, and to send them into the camp of the enemy, because We have the power to do that. And we have the power to cultivate that in our own lives when we're allowing Jesus to really shape us and to mold us and to create us into what we were meant to be. Because just because you didn't have a parental figure maybe that taught you how to do that, maybe you're a first generation Christian or someone who really does want to get serious about Jesus in the midst of a family who isn't, you can do this because you have the ultimate parental figure in mm-hmm. Jesus. And if you hold on to that and you allow him to convict you where you need to be convicted, to mold you where you need to be molded, to tear down your walls and rebuild them in the places that they should be rebuilt, you will be a threat to the enemy as well. So let that be a little encouragement to you. And we are going to wrap this episode up in prayer. So please pray with us. Dear Lord, I just thank you for this day, and I thank you for giving Lily and I the opportunity to talk about some of the things that we have been thinking about, some of the things that you've been revealing to each of us in our own studies of different things, and something that you made especially clear to Lily during her quiz this morning. I pray that you would just help each and every one of us to really take seriously the responsibilities that you have given us in our lives. Even if we don't have kids that we're raising yet, I pray that you would help us to get serious about preparing for that stage of life, or that we would be that person who pours into someone who maybe doesn't have a parental figure to show them how to live and how to be more like you. And I pray that you would just give us all kinds of opportunities like that to pour into the people around us, to disciple them, to teach them how to be more like you as we learn how to become more like you. And I pray that you would just help each and every one of us to put action to the things that we've talked about today, and that you would make all of us into threats to the enemy. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Alrighty, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to download this episode and any others that you may have missed, and we will talk to y'all next Monday. Bye, guys.